Hi, Mickey. Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm in a weird skittish mood because of the Santa Ana winds they have out here, Bob.
What do those winds carry? Do they,
Well, Raymond Chandler wrote about these winds in a book called The Red Wind and said, mm-hmm. It was one of those hot, dry Santas that come down through the mountain passes and curl your hair and make your nerves jump and your skin itch. On nights like that, every booze party ends in a fight. Meek little wives feel the edge of the carving knife and study their husbands' necks.
Oh, I hate those kinds of winds.
It's one of those winds, so...
That's just the kind of influence that doesn't need to be added to my household.
Everybody's in a pissy mood out here.
Okay, and that's so unusual for you, but I'll try to get used to it. So, the final presidential debate ended only moments ago. You and I agreed not to watch any of the commentary because we didn't want to be corrupted by the early phases of the formation of the conventional wisdom, but... Just to show that we could do MSM conventional wisdom if we wanted to, you know, I'm going to ask you to tell us, to predict what the conventional wisdom will be, will have crystallized as by the time people view this tomorrow morning.
That doesn't show we can do conventional wisdom. That shows we can do meta-conventional wisdom, predicting what the conventional wisdom is. Don't you want to know what I actually think also?
I see. So you will be spouting conventional wisdom while conscious of the fact that you're spouting it, whereas the people on MSM spout it oblivious to the fact that what they're doing...
You're intentionally twisting my words. Stop lying about my record. See, it's the wind. The wind just drives you crazy. No, the point is, I can tell you what the conventional wisdom will be, which is that McCain had Obama on the defensive in the first half. He did himself a little good. He looked younger. He looked better than the last debate, but it wasn't enough to turn the thing around. He cemented sort of the more conventional ideological differences between himself and Obama, yet at the same time distancing himself from President Bush. He said, I am not President Bush. He called Obama Mr. Government at one point by accident, which will stick.
Mr. Government?
Yes.
What did he mean to say?
He meant to say Mr. Obama. But it was a very, very effective and completely accidental slip, but I think it'll stick.
Effective in what way?
Senator government. You call him Senator government. Effective in that you know, he wants to tar him as a big spending liberal, and he calls him Senator government. It's as good as anything else he came up with. You want to know what I think?
Not especially, but I'm sure there are people out there who do. So go ahead.
And then we'll ask what you think, Bob. I thought the convention was basically right, but he missed this huge opportunity to emphasize what an unknown Obama is. I mean, to bring that buyer's remorse to the surface.
He didn't look at him and say, "Who is Barack Obama?"
Well, let's say you've only served half a term in the Senate. You seem like a great guy, but we don't know who you are yet. Give yourself another 4 years. The voters don't know you. They don't know what you're going to do. You might, replace Lawrence Summers as your economic advisor with Amiri Baraka. I mean, nobody knows.
Could happen. I agree. I hadn't thought of that. I agree that buyer's remorse is the great threat that Obama faces, and I suspect that he may face it, more by virtue of being black. I mean, I think... And that's why I still have not let go of the idea that we may see some Bradley effect when it comes time to actually pull the lever. That's maybe more pronounced than it was in the primaries where it didn't show up much at all. But I agree with you that that's Obama's vulnerability. And you're right. McCain didn't really try to play on that.
No.
I agree with you that McCain seemed to. I don't know if I'd say he won the first half of the debate, but he certainly did better than he did in the previous debates for the first half.
Well,
and but then I thought Obama, to my eyes, just kind of clearly won the second half. Everything after the Ayers kind of exchange.
Obama's response in Ayers was really weak.
I didn't think so,
what
especially.
So he was 8 years old. I mean, if Charles Manson, if Charles Manson had done his killings when you were 8, would you associate with him later in life? No. It's irrelevant how old Obama was when it happened. He's supposed to know who he's associating with.
I think you've subjected that sentence to more sustained logical scrutiny than the average voter will, and it matters a lot more kind of how self-assured he looks as he delivers what seems like a coherent explanation and things like that. I mean, I had my moment of Obama criticism was, and I think this was mistaken, he probably shouldn't have done this, but, you know, when they finally got out the actual line, you know, he pals around with terrorists, and McCain then, not to, you know, in the same kind of wave of discussion, says, look, I can't control everything that everybody at my campaign rally says. You know, I wanted Obama to say, well, can you control what your running mate says, and do you endorse it or not? I guess it would be that would be a mistake.
Obama didn't have to be on offense tonight, I think.
I think that's a good point, and it wouldn't have made sense for him to take risks.
But
I think I felt with the last two debates, I've said after them, I think Obama did what he had to do, and I think you can say that about tonight, right?
My friend Annie Bardak had a piece in Slate about McCain associating with these Cuban terrorists who not only are unapologetic, but actually killed dozens of people, blew up a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that excuses errors, because it doesn't, but I sort of think that Obama's association with errors is worse for some reason I can't quite put my finger on, probably because it involves terrorism against our own country and not against a foreign power. But that would have been a good one to bring up.
If you want to go negative, but, you know, do you watch the CNN version that has these, the lines with they've got the focus group, and it's independent voters in Ohio, and they're pressing either I like this or I don't like this.
I hate those things, but they're mesmerizing.
They are totally hypnotizing. I mean, I didn't see either guy's face tonight. I was just watching the lines. But if you watch those, you know, you'll see that, by and large, the audiences have hated it when people go negative. Even just in the sense of criticizing people's voting records, people, you know, criticizing past policies.
But
tonight it was a little less so. The males were a little more open to McCain going negative against Obama. It was a more Obama male crowd in the focus group
tonight.
You
have to understand that has nothing to do with how people are going to vote. I mean, focus groups hated Hillary's 3 a.m. ad because it was negative, and it worked. Okay? That's the visceral...
Right.
Visceral reaction before you've even heard the argument. You hear the word abortion, and if they're pro and you're pro, you click the dial. You don't even hear what they're saying. It's not a measure of how effective the debate was.
Maybe not. I also wonder whether people whether this doesn't happen sometimes. You know, McCain's talking and he's saying, "I will bring you a wonderful future," and they're going, "Yes, yes, that's good." And then he says, "And my opponent, you know, raped several women or something." And they think, rape, that's terrible, and they kind of press negative, but it's not really a negative evaluation of McCain.
Right, they get confused. It just happens to be the only gimmick they have out there. I thought McCain had some problems when he tried to make fun of Obama saying spread the wealth around.
Yeah, because that's a good phrase.
I thought voters
might have
said, hey, you know, I could use some of that wealth being spread around.
Exactly. He sneers. My opponent wants to spread the wealth. And I'm here if anybody wants to send some my way, you know.
The key phrase is redistribution
right.
that triggers the alarm bells, and Obama didn't use that phrase. But McCain should have used it, and he didn't. Bob Schieffer made McCain look young. That's clear. How awful was Bob Schieffer? Let's get that out of the way.
What was the most awful thing about him? I thought he too often let McCain have the last word, but maybe that's my bias showing up.
He didn't ask any interesting questions that caused anything surprising to happen. He just, he just let the candidates do whatever canned moves they planned to do, and it was a really boring debate.
Has any moderator succeeded in provoking any interesting reaction in the course of three debates?
No, because they've had boring dinosaur MSM moderators.
You know who they should have, Mickey?
They should have Glenn Lowry and John McWhorter.
I was thinking you, man.
Harry Shearer.
Or, you know who else they could bring in? Is Joe Wurzelberger.
It's all about Joe Wurzelberger and autism.
It was all about Joe Wurzelberger tonight, that's for sure. Joe the plumber.
No, and autism. There can't be that many autistic parents out there.
The focus group lines didn't just jump when they started talking about funding for autistic children, which I think confirms your point.
Oh, really?
They did not jump. I expected, I remember I predicted to my daughters in a very sexist fashion when they started talking about special needs kid, I said, you know, you're going to see the female line jump here. And you didn't especially. You saw the male and female line just slightly.
Because of your profound knowledge of evolutionary psychology led you astray.
Yes, and my profound sexism.
Obama did give one very good answer.
I thought Obama gave many good answers, but go ahead.
The answer to have you ever gone against your party was bizarrely effective. I had forgotten about the tort reform vote, which, you know, maybe was a freebie vote because it wasn't going anywhere. But that's one. And charter schools is another. I thought he parried that very well.
Yeah, I thought when McCain challenged him to name one time when he had crossed his party that they had done the research and Obama could not possibly dredge up anything. But Obama just, you know, I thought kind of hit it out of the park more or less.
When McCain gave his list of things where he's gone against the Republican establishment, I thought sort of the most significant thing in the debate was the issue he left out, Bob. And you know what that issue he didn't want to boast about to the American
I've got it narrowed down to two, and I know which one it actually is, either immigration reform or welfare reform, and I think it's the first.
Well, why would it be welfare reform? He hasn't...
Just because those are your two hobby horses. It was a kind of a Mickey joke.
It could have been card check. That's my current hobby horse.
Yeah, that's your new hobby horse, and it's about time you changed horses. You should change horses every decade or so, I think.
Thanks, Bob. But it shows that the immigration, they totally want a bifurcated message. They want to give the message to Hispanic voters and over Spanish language TV and radio. But to the vast majority of the people, they know immigration reform is really risky and might really hurt them, so they ain't touching it.
It's a risky scheme for both of them.
And I find that very encouraging as an opponent of comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah.
If it was so damn popular, they would have boasted about it.
One thing people have been saying that I think is at least as true as ever in this debate was just the way you just see the contempt that McCain seems to have for Obama, right? Doesn't McCain just seem like this tightly wrapped, high-strung, angry guy? I thought less so in the first part, but doesn't he come out that way?
He made a conscious effort to be sunny and nice in the first part, and I thought it succeeded as long as it did, and then sort of a Santa Ana wind blew through the room, and he got grouchy.
He can keep the reptilian core under control for about 30 minutes,
but,
I think.
I think he's more pissed. He's sort of pissed off at his situation. I'm told he's sort of fatalistic. And, you know, he thinks it's sort of like, well, it's not, obviously it's not a Republican year, and he's doomed to run in a bad year. But that would piss me off. And like all the Hillary supporters who probably hated Obama much even more than McCain does, they think the guy has no business being president. I mean, they're stunned that this man comes from out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he's about to be president.
Which
is sort of stunning until you sort of see that he looks like he'll be okay in the job.
Oh, I would say more than okay. In terms of the way he looks, I mean, I'm not... I think there are reservations you can have about him, but I think his overwhelming success in these debates has been to time after time look like not just a guy who could be president, but of the two of them, the guy you just want to watch as president, right? Which guy do you want to be, you know, have to see on TV all the time?
It's obviously that the next couple weeks on my blog are going to be, should I worry about the Democratic tsunami if they actually get a 60 or 59 vote majority in the Senate, they could do a lot of good and a lot of damage, and you know. I sort of trust Obama more when the Democrats don't have a 60-vote majority. because if you look at his career, I think he's not a fight-the-power kind of guy. His whole thing of power is when somebody really powerful wants something, if they really want it, you give in. And maybe you give in a little, not as much as they want, and you hope that you can, by giving in to everybody, you move the debate to some good place. And that's not a crazy way to govern. But
moreover, it should set to rest the fears on the right that he's some kind of radical. I think he's in many ways a politician. You know, he will go with the flow to a considerable extent.
Well, but it's radical element. It's sort of not radical, but left wing institutional elements in the party who are pushing him and who he would accommodate to. So
he'll be moving
from the center to the left to accommodate the powers that be, and that's where the danger comes in.
Fine, but if he's
left negotiating with the right, then you don't worry that much.
Okay, my point is just that when they say, who is Barack Obama, they don't want you to imagine that, oh, he might support teachers' unions, you know. They want you to think much darker thoughts, and those are the thoughts that are undermined by the analysis you're making, which is that to some extent he's a go-with-the-flow guy. He's not going to fight major institutional structures and so on.
But they're not undermined because the first thing he's going to do is card check, which is going to make it much easier for labor unions who are declining until this year as a share of the American workforce, precipitously, going to give them what to my mind is a pretty unfair institutional edge and lead to a resurgence of labor at a time when really we should be looking for other ways to protect working Americans.
Well,
And that's sort of a radical left-wing thing. It's a tinkering with the institutions of industrial democracy. And that's what people are worried about, and that's where the power is.
I think that's what your policy nerd friends are worried about. Those ads, when they say who is Barack Obama and blah blah blah, they're trying to make you think that the guy is subversive, not just that he would support policies that within the spectrum of conventional American politics are fairly far to the left. They want you to think much darker thoughts. That's all I'm saying. In fact, they don't even want you to think thoughts. They aren't even appealing to the thinking part of your being. They just are appealing to fear.
You seem to have a condescending view of the American electorate. I think there's a non-fearful, rational fear of Obama.
If I said I was sure the ads worked, that might be condescending. I'm saying that is the aim of the ads. I'm saying that the McCain people have a cynical view, and I guess a condescending view of the American people.
Why isn't it a twofer? It seems to me you're worried about who he associates with, so you're worried about who will appoint. The classic example, I'm worried about what the Ayers issue says to me is not that he's going to appoint Bill Ayers to anything, but that he might see the lower ranks of the bureaucracy as a payoff to his friends on the left with a bunch of crazy lefties. And if you appoint a bunch of crazy lefties to lower ranks of the bureaucracy, they can do a lot of damage. Exhibit A, Roberta Achtenberg, a lower-level HUD official in the Clinton administration, an activist from San Francisco, who helped pioneer the program to Mau Mau savings and loans, or banks, I forget which, into giving more loans to minorities who otherwise would not qualify for the loans. And we all know how that turned out. Not very well.
So okay, but
you
again,
can do a lot,
I'm just
and
saying,
if you, you appoint some lefty to undersecretary for welfare, they can rewrite the regs and do a lot of damage.
Again, you and your policy nerd friends can worry about that. I'm just suggesting that when Sarah Palin says he pals around with terrorists, her intention is not to get her audience to think, oh, no, he might support card check. Okay? Do you really think that's the way they want the message to translate, Mickey?
Well, I think a large part of the message is he has bad judgment in choosing his lefty friends, and he comes from a lefty environment.
Oh, Mickey, you
and
are
that's
so
where
naive.
He's from.
Mickey, the idea
I think it's a
is to get you to think
they don't have
that
to
he's evil. Mickey, come on, give me a break.
You're like
you
one of
know
these,
what the idea
you're
is.
You're just like one of these people who said when they ran a welfare format, they were appealing to racism. Well, I think they were. But when Lee Atwater ran such an ad, he was probably appealing to both racism and legitimate policy worries about welfare. It was
Wait.
A twofer. He didn't
so
have to choose. They don't
so
have to
saying,
choose. They could get both of them. Bill Ayers stands for both of them.
So you're saying those welfare ads compare with saying about someone, he pals around with terrorists? Come on. In that case, the message you're talking about, the message that he's, the really alarming message would be delivered by implication. She is explicitly saying that the guy hangs out with terrorists, Mickey.
It's,
there's just a huge difference. Come on.
Okay.
I can't believe
I can't believe
you don't consider this one of the most despicable acts in the history of American campaign politics, really.
Oh, nowhere near. He does
What is worse?
He does pal around with a terrorist. Well,
no,
it's
he
true.
Doesn't.
Ayers
Mickey.
Is a terrorist. He pals around with him. Of course he does. It's
Mickey,
not important,
Mickey,
but
Mickey.
He does.
Mickey, did you just say pals around? So that would be present tense, right? So that would mean you're asserting that Obama...
Around.
Just listen for a second. Asserting that Obama today, or at least this week, or this month, or this year, or something, recently, you're using the present tense, has been palling around Bill Ayers. Do you think that's true?
It's a figure of speech that means he has palled around.
Oh, it's a figure of speech. I see. So whenever anyone uses the present tense, they may mean the past tense, because after all, tenses are just figures of speech.
It's pretty clear what she meant, and she didn't mean that he was palling around with him this week. She
didn't want her audience, which most of whom don't know the facts, right?
That's right.
Most of whom don't know the facts. They're stupid idiots,
Bob, and they just eat everything up that she feeds them. That's the attitude that helps the Democrats.
That is the premise of saying that kind of thing.
No, it's
absolutely
not. She's saying he's palled around with a terrorist, and that's a problem for him, and it is a problem for him. It bothers me about him. It doesn't bother you that he was on board with Ayers and sort of an ally of his and never called Ayers out and claims not to have known that or thought that Ayers had been rehabilitated when he hadn't, when anybody with a brain would know that he hadn't. He just got his job because his daddy's a big power in Chicago. That bothers me. It doesn't disqualify him, but it bothers me. It should bother you.
Oh, you know, if you laid it out accurately, the way the situation actually is, and I thought about it, it might bother me a little, but I think not very much at all, given the way the world works. But my main point is the way it's being presented by Sarah Palin, and now by you, because you say, yes, the pals around, that's the truth, right? You're saying that's an accurate statement.
I guess it had a huge kernel of truth, and therefore it was not the most despicable political act in history, which is what you said, which I think is insane.
And in fact, the complete I again challenge you to come up with something more despicable. But the complete quote is even worse. It's like pals around with terrorists who would whatever, you know, terrorize America or something. As if Bill Ayers, as if there's some kind of reasonable chance. I mean, even if they were palling around now, as if there's some reasonable chance that Bill Ayers would revive his career as a terrorist. I mean, it's just thoroughly dishonest. And I want you to give me a more despicable campaign message. Maybe you can find one, but tell me, what is it in the history of the country?
I don't know. Weren't there Washington and Jefferson, when the Federalists and Jeffersonians were going at it, it seems to me they were routinely accusing each other of fathering illegitimate children and doing all sorts of despicable things. That seems pretty despicable.
That's not nearly as bad. Mickey, when you say... What they're saying about Obama, and you're going to consider this a cynical interpretation, just as I consider yours incredibly naive. What the message they are trying to deliver is, Obama is the enemy. Mickey, we're in a war on terror. The enemies are terrorists. To say that you are palling around with terrorists is to say you are aiding, abetting, and consorting with the enemy. You're saying that's as malicious a lie as he fathered an illegitimate child?
This is a typical and futile and misguided liberal direction you're going in, which is you have a message. It has a legitimate and an illegitimate component, and you ignore the legitimate component and say it's despicable because of the illegitimate component, leaving the legitimate component out there. That's a losing strategy. It's been perennially a losing strategy for Democrats. And you have to deal with the legitimate part of the message, and the legitimate part of the message is he did hang around a little more with this guy than we would want somebody who's in the White House to hang around.
I didn't deny that. B,
well,
I'm not talking strategy at all. I'm just giving you my judgment. I am passing moral judgment on Sarah Palin and John McCain. It's just my judgment. I'm not recommending that Obama say this. I don't recommend it. I'm just saying it's the truth.
It seems to me, haven't there been people who've been called homosexuals, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm just waiting. You can email it in, because so far you haven't come up with anything nearly as despicable in the whole history
of American
history, politics.
But I'm pretty confident that it's not the most despicable thing in American history.
Email it in. Put it in the comments section.
I can't get it in the comments section anymore. I used to know how to do it, and nobody's bothered to tell me how.
Well, I know
it's
people blogging
heads. It's part of my continuing ostracism from blogging heads.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, I know people at Blogging Heads. I can get your comments in the comments section.
Maybe I'll put it on my blog. I don't know.
Okay, so
I'll email it to you, and you can do whatever the hell you want with it.
Okay, I will publicize it. I always try to advance your...
I'm sure our commenters know more about American history than I do, so they'll probably provide one before I will.
I hope we see a lively debate. Look, and I'm not saying... I don't know my history well enough to say there's never been anything... I just don't recall any. I've been paying attention.
Don't backtrack.
No,
I
just ask you.
You're weaseling.
I ask you, Mickey, if you knew of one. It was just a polite inquiry. I don't personally recall one, and I paid a certain amount of attention. But
didn't Aaron Burr and Hamilton come to a fairly blows over somebody repeating a slur that had been cast against Hamilton?
It's the kind of thing that McCain would duel over because he's a big believer in honor, but I doubt it ranked up there with your palling around with terrorists.
The National Enquirer hints that Obama had an affair with a pedophile. That seems pretty despicable.
Well, that's a twofer.
He was very young, and it would have been the pedophile's fault, but nevertheless.
That's interesting.
And there was no evidence that the guy even was a pedophile, for that matter.
I will only close by saying
but
we should move on.
That seems despicable.
I will only say in closing, I cannot believe you are defending that statement by Sarah Palin.
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that there's a legitimate worry there.
But you defend her formulation of it. You think it's fair?
Well, you could if it was suitably hedged with caveats, which I don't think it was. I think it would be defensible. Yes. I'm not saying he's a terrorist. I'm not saying the heir is the terrorist now, but he's palling around with former terrorists. Yeah, that would
you're
be
saying
okay.
he is. You're saying he is palling around. We should drop this. I just can't believe you keep saying this. He's not palling around with a guy.
Well, I'd like to know the last time he palled around with him. It's not the world's most important issue. I just, I don't think he's been a little squirrely on it, and it's not exactly a confidence builder.
Okay, here's a related question that will segue us into a more sedate. Mode, I think.
Why do we want sedate? We have that debate.
I need a rest, man. I've been screaming for 10 minutes. Yes. I need a rest. Are you convinced that that this line of attack is not working for McCain? The conventional wisdom is that it's not. I'm not so sure. I mean, the stories you see debunking it as a tactic, like the story in the New York Times today, was not to me persuasive. I didn't think the poll numbers they showed really illuminated whether the tactic is working among the very small segment of voters that they need it to work among, the true undecideds, how many of those does it have a decisive effect on one way or the other? I haven't seen any numbers.
Wasn't there a big swing in the internals of the poll? People thought more of Obama and less of McCain as a result of the negative second debate. So that seems to be some evidence. I mean, he's not moving up in the polls, so, yeah, I think the evidence is that they're not working. I don't think he's hit... I don't think, just bringing up scattershot Ayers and Acorn is enough. He has to show somehow how this goes to the core of Obama's character in some sort of telling way. Otherwise, it's just like making a fuss about Bill Clinton's trip to Russia where he supposedly got his marching orders from Moscow, which is, at least as bad as what Sarah Palin said. So it just doesn't work. It reeks of desperation.
So I
think there will be buyer's remorse. I don't think I don't think this line of attack is triggering it.
Yeah. I gotta change headphones. Are you hearing interference?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Oh, so that's not my headphones. Should we do a real high wire act and even while on camera hang up and dial again?
Jesus. Okay, you're gonna dial me?
I'm going to dial you.
Okay.
Yeah.
away.
That is better.
A little better. I was just practicing some of my meditation techniques while you were away.
Yeah, I could use some of those. I got a little out of hand there. I'm sorry. But
You didn't. You were great. It looked good.
It's great TV, isn't it, Mickey?
Lively, yes. They'll say to you what they said to me at when the one time I was on Crossfire. I was the best guest they've had since Rabbi Kahana, who was like a complete raving lunatic. Anyway,
yeah. Those were the days.
Go ahead.
So where do you think the campaign is then? I mean, I think you say the polls haven't moved. The two that I pay most attention to, just because they have the daily trackings out, are Rasmussen and Gallup. Actually, have moved a little toward McCain over the last 7-8
days.
A little.
But
during the airing of those negative ads.
Yeah. So maybe they're. And I thought McCain helped himself a little bit tonight because he was genial and on the offensive for the first half of the debate.
Which is about all anybody can stand to watch. Yeah, genial, but you know he didn't like burst a vessel or anything. So that's genial by his standards. But geez, the pent up anger in that. I mean, and it even. His attempts at humor, it kind of sabotages. Like, near the end, like when Obama said, well, you know, those vouchers you favor would only help people in D.C. And do you remember McCain kind of sarcastically sneered, because there's not enough vouchers, we don't do it even though it's working.
Yeah,
I get it.
And
it was like nobody got it. I mean, it was just so weird and overwrought.
That was bad. I don't also understand why he didn't say, I know I'm behind, you know. You know, I'm a few points behind. Are you really going to elect this guy? I mean, that's...
Or are you really going to elect a black man, maybe, he could have said.
A man with as thin a record of proven service. I mean, even... This is something I was thinking about, character. I mean, even... everybody's... You know, I'm a character voter, not an issues voter. I think position papers are a dime a dozen. They don't necessarily reflect what you're going to do. You have to look at character. It does show... what you're going to do, but it's really on character itself is only an estimate of what you're going to do. I mean, people do things against character sometimes, right? So, character itself is a very crude approximation of what a guy's going to be like. And you know, Obama doesn't even have the record that one uses to create that crude approximation. So it's just you're buying a total pig in a poke. That's what he should say.
But that's kind of an exaggeration. He's got a little legislative record at both the state level and the federal level, so I don't know how.
One can pick through it for hopeful signs and.
I agree. It's the closest thing to a vulnerability he can exploit, and he should have. Of course, what some people would say is, "Hey, you're the guy who put Sarah Palin a heartbeat away," that's one of the complaints about his picking her.
I mean, a person who's a governor of a state and survives to re-election, which Palin hasn't yet. There's, you know something about them. You know they didn't screw up so badly that the voters rebelled against them. That was always a confidence builder for Reagan. He had been reelected as governor. How bad could he be? Are the voters of California idiots? Obama doesn't really have that record. I mean, he forced all his opponents out of the race and walked in office. You know, I mean, it's just, he beat
politics, how he got there. I mean, the fact is he's been in Congress. He's been in the state legislature. I don't know. For me, the overwhelming aura of these things is just like from Obama tonight, especially in the second half of the debate, but to some extent in all the debates, you get a sense of cool command. In fact, I thought he showed himself a little more in command of the issues, Obama, than in past debates. I thought he treated some of them in more depth and with more subtlety than in the past. But certainly, compared to McCain's speaking style, though McCain was better tonight than in the town hall thing for sure, you just get the sense of cool command, and that's what you want in a commander-in-chief.
I agree with that. Isn't that what George Washington had? That's what I hear.
A retort just popped to mind that I can't, even on Blogging Heads TV, would be inappropriate, but I want to steer you to a YouTube about George Washington at some point in the future.
That's completely oracular. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I know. That's the appeal, though, of Blogging Heads, I think. The obscurity. This, and the, McCain was not... I wanted to ask you about the erratic meme, right, with McCain.
Yeah.
That's being taken as code for his age. And I don't think... I think it validly is something else, actually, right? I mean, when he started behaving erratically during the first big week of economic crisis, I mean, epic crisis, I thought, yeah, this is impulsive McCain. It's not an age thing. He was impulsive in his 60s and his 50s. He was impulsive back when he was crashing jet planes, you know, by being a daredevil.
No, that's clear. I don't think it shouldn't be a reflection of his age. It's a reflection of who he is.
But that's the way it's being interpreted.
He's like the fighter pilot whose plane is going down. He says, I've tried A, that didn't work. I've tried B, I've tried C, yeah. I've tried D. Time to, you know, trying to try something else.
And in terms of vulnerabilities Obama should, if he can convey them successfully, the thing I think should have been played up a little more is, you know, we do not want a daredevil as commander-in-chief. You know, he brags about how many risks he's taken in the course of his life. He's crashed planes. He's done this. He's done that. We've seen how impulsive he is just in the last few weeks.
Now he's crashed the campaign. So.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
But I think...
That's why I think the stunt that he pulled with trying to put off the debate was the turning point of the campaign so far.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about the economic crisis?
Sure.
We only have a few minutes left.
Because you got to go blog this thing.
I have to go blog this thing. It does... There's a very good piece by, I think he's a lord, Skidelsky, the biographer of Keynes in the Washington Post that I recommend, about how Keynes understood that markets were imperfect and subject to animal passions and... There was a cycle of boom and bust, and it's very useful as far as it goes. There's obviously something to do with the long-term risk and reward structure of capitalism, where rich people are encouraged to take greater risks than they should, perhaps because by the time the negative consequences incur, they'll be dead. You know, in the long term, we're always dead. In part because maybe the bankruptcy laws protect them from the downside, but you could construct some, I would think, some model of why there are booms and busts and irrational behavior that would be completely rational, that even free market people would say, yes, you know, there's death. Death is, when you put death into the equation, people are encouraged to take risks because, hey, you know, they can live high and then when the bill comes due, they're dead. I don't know.
So wait, you're
Does
saying
that make any sense
first,
at all?
I don't think I understood it entirely. I don't think it's what you your argument doesn't make sense so much that
the,
I just don't comprehend
the problem, totally. The problem with the current crisis was not that Fannie Mae made these bad loans, which it did, mm-hmm. and that it encouraged businessmen to foolishly think that they could buy and sell these loans while protecting themselves through elaborate untested computer models, which it did, but the fact that businessmen were stupid enough to attempt to protect themselves and buy and sell these loans with untested computer models instead of treating it as just a cost of doing business. Oh, Fannie Mae says we have to give some more bad loans. That's a debit on our balance sheet. They tried to turn it into a profit center. And for a while, you know, 10, 15 years, they made a lot of money selling this crap to mainly foreign investors. But now the bill is coming due. And the question is the bill coming due in such a way that would have discouraged rich wheeler dealers like these people to not do it in the first place? And I think no.
I think, you know, we just had Robert Shiller, this eminent economist, on not long ago, and he said, I think, was saying that a lot of the source of bubbles is just that people forget, you know, in the immediate aftermath of a losing war, a country's not too militaristic, but then it forgets and gets too adventurous. And similarly, you know, the rich guys you're talking about, they won't be doing stupid stuff in the next 2, 3, 4 years, but eventually they'll start doing stupider and stupider stuff. So that, I think that's the conventional explanation of bubbles, but I'm not sure that, I don't think that's addresses
all
your...
I think my explanation is a little different. My explanation is that it's not that people irrationally forget what the costs and benefits are, it's mm-hmm. that people rationally assess the costs and benefits, and the structure of costs and benefits is skewed to encourage them rationally to take risks that as for society as a whole and for the perfect operation of markets, they wouldn't take. I guess that's the argument.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me the risk that people take is a function of their preference for risk. You know, there's a classic curve in economics, and you can position yourself anywhere along it in terms of how much risk you like, and how much risk you like is a function of things like, you know, classically of things like gender and age and so on. So, like, you know, young unmarried men take more risks than old men with families to support and stuff. I think I'm continuing to be unresponsive.
I don't think you're addressing it.
But I seem incapable of comprehending what you're saying. So let me say something that's at least related.
Okay.
Which is that the logic, I mean, there's some things that are becoming clear. There's all these arguments. Was it regulation, deregulation? I think a few things are becoming fairly clear, that whatever you think the policy should be, one source of the problem was that in hedge funds, for example, are not transparent. We don't know what's going on in them, and they're not regulated. So they could be as highly leveraged as they wanted to be, and the logic behind them being unregulated, this is related to your argument, was that, hey, to buy into a hedge fund, you've got to have a lot of money. There's a floor on how much money it takes to get into a hedge fund. Since these are just rich guys, we don't worry about protecting them with regulation. They're big boys. They lose some money. They'll live. The flaw in that logic was that there were negative externalities to their stupidity. Okay? So, in other words, their bad decisions turned out to affect lots of other people who aren't rich. And one reason for that is that so the logic for not regulating them just did not hold, really, in kind of classic terms. Turns out one reason that there were these externalities was that the system was structured in a way that made the risk more contagious than a lot of people realized, and it had to do with the way mortgages were securitized, the way these debt equity swaps. Apparently, I mean, this is really inside baseball, but a lot of people are saying it wasn't the existence of derivatives per se, but if there had been a publicly a market where you could publicly trade the debt equity swaps rather than having to engage in bilateral swaps with people. It's a long story, but the market was structured in a way that made the risk contagious. And that's the problem, is that these risk-taking guys were not just hurting themselves.
Well, that's your incomprehensible explanation of what went wrong with the market.
Really?
I buy that one,
too. Yeah.
Well,
I'll endorse yours.
The externalities one. I don't quite understand why bilateral things are more contagious than markets, because we're seeing markets go berserk now. I mean, markets go up 900, down 900, because people are behaving irrationally, and I don't understand why you have to resort to the fact that there weren't enough markets to explain irrational behavior.
Well, I could give you my little technical example, but it would get to be even more obscure, and I only half understand it. I could try to illuminate it, but it's your call, because I doubt anybody
cares. Why don't you write about it and stick it in the comments? Ha! Huh.
Yeah, I'll do that.
You can do that if I could do that. Isn't it possible? I can't believe you're not ribbing me about Paul Krugman winning a Nobel Prize.
Oh, yeah, that's got to hurt, huh?
That was not a good way for Mickey to start the week. But it's for working it 20 years ago that he apparently deserves the Nobel Prize for. I wrongly predicted that his recent incarnation as a take no prisoners columnist, he would alienate so many people that he wouldn't win the Nobel Prize. What I forgot was how politicized the Nobel Prize was. It seems to be everything they do is political. Obviously, they did this in some sense to try to influence the election. And it just gets really annoying how all the institutions in society are doing their little part to help Obama. The Simpsons had a little pro-Obama thing.
Krugman is not a big Obama advocate, actually. He was almost openly hostile throughout the primaries.
Right, but he's now obviously pro-Obama, and he's an advocate of regulation and whatever Democrat. You know, he's likely to have some sort of influence in the Obama administration, unlikely to have any in the McCain administration.
I think you're reading.
And, 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 and you know, this is another one of those allegedly neutral institutions that's no more neutral than Steven Spielberg. I mean,
but
absurd.
Wait a second. I don't know who exactly awards this award, but a lot of them have gone to these University of Chicago conservatives types. I mean, I think two or three actually at the University of Chicago.
Right, but not in October.
And then a lot of libertarians have gotten the Nobel, a lot.
I bet not in October of an election year.
Well, see, there's where I think you're being a little too cynical. What I think is true about the sense in which it's political is that you're probably right that Krugman was not helping his chances. In a generic sense, it doesn't help your chances to write a highly contentious column. What changed the game in this case is just George Bush. Just the fact that George Bush became this internationally loathed figure, and anybody who is aiming their rhetorical darts at George Bush is then your friend. I suspect that has a lot more to do with it than any kind of attempt to influence the election.
It doesn't contradict what I'm saying. It only reinforces it, because we're now having the election where we're going to decide whether George Bush's policies, at least in Iraq, are going to prevail.
I wouldn't say it confirms it. I would say my theory is compatible with yours, but an alternative explanation in terms of, well, not alternative. I mean, they could both be true, but they aren't the same, and I could, either of us could be totally right and the other one wrong.
Anyway, I've become allergic to the everybody doing their part for Obama. I saw this mediocre movie called Rachel Getting Married, where they, you know, they have a black, two people getting married, and of course the groom is black and from Hawaii, okay? And, like, everybody's reading a lot of significance into that. Obviously not unintentional. And it's just sort of, it's grating after a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand the human impulse to do your little bit, but somehow when everybody does it, it becomes really annoying.
Well,
there you go.
Here's a closing cosmic question. Do you think it's truer now than it used to be that just in general people use their positions when they are in positions that ostensibly are kind of objective, like journalist, awarder of prize, whatever? Do you think these days people in such positions more consciously use their position to influence the outcome of political events than, say, 30, 40, 50 years ago, when maybe people took more seriously the idea that there's value in just doing your job, and that's how you serve society. You do it as cleanly and objectively as you can.
Oh yes, and I think that's the transition from the old New York Times to the Pinch Rosenthal New York Times has been that it's much more explicit and blatant and accepted that you're doing your part for the causes you believe in, starting with gay rights and moving on down the line to all sorts of other liberal and democratic causes. It's just much more blatant. Now, it's also a natural human impulse. I mean, I did it. You know, when I was at Newsweek, I would try to conspire to elect Dukakis. A lot of good that did. But somehow it's weird. I was startlingly ineffective, because somehow you couldn't get away with being blatant enough to help Dukakis, and there was no helping Dukakis anyway. It's not clear to me whether the media has more power than it used to. I don't think it does. It's sort of more ineffective but more blatant about it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. First of all, there apparently was. There were ideological newspapers, you know, in the middle part of this century and in the early part. Look, Time magazine was conservative, and, you know, and you had Hearst, and you had, what was the guy's name in Chicago who owned the, yeah. So you had ideological papers, and apparently earlier in the history of the Republic, it was the norm. It was explicitly the idea that they were more like kind of contemporary European papers, right? So I don't know. I don't know how radically different that is. I just don't know. But I do have a sense that people are more consciously calculating in terms of the influence they'll have.
The way I put it is that they're less good at controlling their subconscious. like, the New York Times published this sex story on McCain, okay? I thought it was sort of justified, okay? But in the New York Times, I'm sure, had a rational, diagram of why this story was justified. But if it had been a Republican, if it had been a Democrat, the rationalization would have been completely different, because there's a subconscious urge to help Democrats. I don't think there's a lot of examination of that subconscious urge going on, I guess. Does that make any sense at all?
I think that's certainly plausible, that the upshot is kind of the same today. It's just that people are more conscious that they're doing it.
Well, if they're more conscious they're doing it, do they sort of go over the line more? Yes, but that is also less effective, I think. The classic being the New York Times sex story, which only helped McCain.
So in closing, what are we calling for? Are we calling for people to get more in touch with their unconscious, or less, or what?
Well, always more in touch, isn't that? I thought that's the whole, that's the meaning I took from your book. Evolutionary psychology is all how our Darwinian aspirations shape our subconscious, and how we look at the various moral frameworks we construct that are really self-interested, and how maybe if we examine them more carefully, we would, not cheat on our wives, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The argument was that, in general, if people were more in touch with the actual underlying motivations, they would be more critical of themselves morally. Right. Would have a harder time kind of pulling one over on other people, because they'd have a harder time pulling one over on themselves. Because we're designed to deceive ourselves in order to deceive others, and in order to transgress various rules and stuff.
And isn't that basic Freudianism, where it was, ego shall be? A process.
I haven't heard that exact line, where it was...
Ego shall be a process not unlike the draining of the Zuider Zee. I think Freud said that.
Really? What, yeah. He was recommending that you replace the id with the ego?
Yes. I think he had several models that contradicted himself at various points, but at one point his crude model was we make the id conscious, and where id was, ego shall be.
That's interesting, although I would think you would ultimately want the superego in charge, because that's the conscience, right?
You would think, but I don't think he said superego. Maybe he said superego. You could look it up.
Well, maybe that's evolutionary psychology's contribution. Our motto is, where id is, superego shall be.
He may have beat you to it, so you should check it out.
You may be right. Now, Mickey, I know... So are we kind of done? I have one closing announcement.
I think we are done, yes.
Okay. I know you. I have two closing answers. I know you have forbidden me to address commenters by name. I shall not do that. There's this thing I'm thinking about doing, and may do it right after we hang up the phone, which is actually just look at a camera and respond to some comments. If I do have the energy to do it, the way you'll know is there will be a link. It'll be the top link in links mentioned, which is on that side of the screen. That will link to my responses to some commenters if we do it. And then if I do it and people comment on my comments about the comments, and it seems like interesting, maybe I'll do it again. But if they don't, then I will accept their verdict graciously. The only other thing is that I was instructed by a Blogging Heads staffer to say the following. You can now follow Blogging Heads updates on Twitter.
Okay.
Mickey? Do you Twitter?
I don't Twitter, but I never understood what Twitter was until I read Rachel Sklar's Twitter page. She Twitters like nonstop, and it's actually really informative, because she has a sort of lawyer's sense of what's interesting and what's not. It's skewed to the left, but it actually works if you want to see whatever Rachel Sklar sees. But if everybody did this, there wouldn't be time to do anything, but it would be highly, highly informative.
Yeah, apparently, hers may be the left, but they say that conservatives are doing a better job of exploiting the Twitterverse. Whereas liberals maybe did a better job in the blogosphere, they say conservatives are trying to stake out the Twitter sphere or Twitterverse or whatever it is.
I don't believe that for a minute. Everybody I know who Twitters is a liberal. And the conservatives staked out the blogosphere first, and then they got overtaken. So, I think
what the liberals did with the blogosphere, right, is that they did a better job of using it as a social instrument. Like Daily Kos has that big community appendage, and conservatives were slow to that game, right? And some conservative blogs still don't even have comments.
Well, it all depends on. I think my crude model is it depends on who's angrier. Mm-hmm. And ever since Florida, the Democrats have been angrier. Before Florida, the Republicans were angrier. And after Obama wins, the right is going to be angrier again. So they'll have a greater online presence. And my rough prediction is Obama will win, and a surprisingly strong and broad opposition to him will crop up surprisingly quickly, including among the press. I think the press is not going to swoon for Obama. Once they have him elected, they're going to be critical of him almost instantly.
I'm too superstitious to predict that Obama will win, but I will say that I think it always depends on events. Horrible things can happen, but I think they will give him a decent-sized honeymoon in the absence of countervailing factors like whatever could happen. But I actually think they'll give him a pretty long honeymoon.
Okay.
So we differ.
We disagree.
And I will be the judge of who is right.
You can be the judge.
Okay. That works for me. Okay. So thank you for another enlightening encounter.
I guess it's been fun. We were sort of rambling all over the lot, but what the hell.
Well, this is like post-debate. It's late. I'm tired, you know. What are we charging for this anyway, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. Okay.
Okay. See you later.
See you around.